Good morning. This is Carol Ventura, Executive Director of Rhode Island Housing. This is the November 20th, 2025 meeting of the Rhode Island Housing Commission. This meeting is also being made available telephonically for access by the public. Terry Lehane, Rhode Island Housing's Director of IT, will provide information on this meeting.
Good morning. This is Terry Lehane, Director of IT at Rhode Island Housing. This meeting will be recorded and available for review on the Rhode Island Housing website within 3 to 5 business days after the meeting. To prevent any feedback or to unmute, press *6. If during the meeting anyone is having technical difficulties with audio or accessing the call, they should call 401-429-1427.
Thank you, Terry. This is Corinne Myers, General Counsel. Good morning, everyone. Members of the public can visit the RA Housing website to view today's agenda and information on each of the actions being taken today. If the teleconference portion of the meeting is interrupted, we will stop the meeting and attempt to restore the audio. Chair of our board, Deborah Potterd, will preside at this morning's meeting. Commissioner, staff, and guests, please do state your name prior to speaking each and every time, for the benefit of those listening in by teleconference and for our minute taker. Now I'll turn it over to the chair to call the meeting to order. Thanks.
Good morning. I'm calling the meeting to order and asking Carol to do.
McAllister.
Here.
Commissioner Barry.
Here.
Commissioner Orr.
Here.
Commissioner Goff.
Here.
Commissioner
Smith.
Here.
Good morning, all. I just want to speak briefly to 2 points. You know, our collective funding round is out, and some stuff's going to go out through the department directly, so just as a brief update, we hope to have the first round of the homeownership funding out by the end of the year. Peter's not going to fall off his chair when I say that. The money for the acquisition program is out. Proposals are due, I think, at the end of two. In that vein, we put a challenge grant to seed a revolving loan fund for nonprofits who would be underwritten by the program manager to receive lines of credit so that they can operate quickly in the market and they don't have to come back to anyone else for approval and then paid upon closing. So hopefully a revolving loan fund, the entity or the team that comes in has to match the $5 million from the bond fund, one for one at least, so hopefully we've got a $10 million. We will get a $10 million revolving loan fund there. Home owner repair is out. There was a brief press conference last Friday, and by Tuesday there were 1,100 applications.
Wow.
Yeah, so some will fall out, but we're trying to figure out what to do. We don't want to raise false expectations at this point. We may have to pause. And as we said at the press conference, it shows that we need new money and a new bond. Huge demand for that. Infrastructure is out. You know, we can tell the number of applications. We can see that they're coming in. That's going to be tremendously oversubscribed. No surprise there either. So that's where we are on the funding going out from department directly. I want to pause, too, and I don't want to sound maudlin or Pollyannish, but I do want to address the fact that we are all working a period where the noise around us can be very disheartening, to say the least. I think it's important to remember that we're fortunate enough to work in a state where the administration, the assembly support the work we do. They support the values we represent. They will protect the work we do. And that the work we do touches people. And that's really important to keep in mind, whether you're on the front lines or behind the scenes, the work we do every day touches people in a positive way. And that's the most important thing to remember. That and that a good defense is a strong offense. And our offense is to continue to do our work, continue to show the value of the work, continue to improve the lives, and make the case for what we do every day. So the noise can be ugly. Let's try and just keep it to one side, keep our heads down, do the work, and appreciate our colleagues and peers that are with us. So with that, I will turn it over to Carol for the Executive Director's report.
Thank you. We have a few updates and reports to you today. My monthly update to the board, a report on the continuum of care by Fiocco, a five-year financial forecast prepared by Carol LaChapelle and her team members, and our recommended updates to the agency's current strategic plan. With respect to my monthly report, demand remains steady for our mortgage products, and I'm pleased to report that we've added 10 new participating lenders to our pool. We have 58 institutions offering our products to folks purchasing on the island. Unfortunately, delinquency remains high, double digits, and we're not seeing much movement in that our development team issued the RFP for tax credits and other ancillary financing in collaboration with the executive office. Applications are back on December 18th.
Yes.
I'm pleased to report that we successfully deployed all of the ERA 2 funding by the deadline. Our partners did yeoman's work getting that money spent, and we certainly appreciate their work to do that. We expect that we'll close this out by the end of the month. And 64 new apartments were placed in service in October, including 40 apartments at the Crossroads New Summer Street building, which came out beautiful, really a spectacular. And we know that Crossroads is in the business of helping our most vulnerable Rhode Islanders, serving people below 30% of AMI. We've had several events during October and November, including groundbreakings for Hope in Maine Kitchen in the West End and Walker Lofts in Lincoln, which I heard was a very tough day to make it into Lincoln with the rain.
A little rainy.
Remember that, Denver, right?
Hard to get by, yes.
While I was on vacation, staff attended the Joint Committee on Legislative Services. As you may all know, the House Minority Leader has requested an audit of Rhode Island Housing and our administration of fiscal recovery funds. James has the opportunity to read my statement in response to the Minority Leader's comments. We hope that Representative Chippendale will accept our offer to meet with us so that we can go over and address some of his concerns in person. We've made that invitation a couple of times. So hopefully that results in information being shared with folks that really need to understand what it is that we do every day. I'm going to turn it over to Elizabeth now to let her talk a little bit about the POC issued by HUD. This is going to have NOFO as a significant impact on and rental assistance to homeless individuals in the state. So,
thank you. This is Elizabeth Bioto. I'm the Director of Strategic Initiatives for Rhode Island Housing. And one of the initiatives that I support in that role is the Continuum of Care, which is a federal program that provides housing for experienced homeless. Rhode Island Housing has two roles in that work. We are a grantee and have a contract with HUD ourselves to provide permanent housing, and that's currently valued at $5 million. And we also organize a funding application to HUD on behalf of the COC. COC funding is not entitlement funding. Instead, we compete regularly for it. And historically, in Rhode Island, we've been quite good at competing for funding and currently have a total portfolio for the state of $17.3 million. However, last week, HUD, who oversees the COC program for the federal government, issued a drastically different NOFO than most previous we've seen. NOFO is their term for the notice that advertises the funding is available. And it does, as Carol mentioned, pose a significant impact to Rhode Island and to Rhode Island Housing on the COC grant. Historically, there are two significant changes I'm going to walk you through. The first is that historically, COCs were permitted to apply for 100% of our permanent housing funding to renew it every year because it is full of people who are living in those units and relying on the rental assistance and services. This year, the NOFO caps the amount that we are allowed to apply for at 30%. So to put that 30% of our portfolio into some context for you, currently 84% of that entire $17.3 million portfolio is for permanent housing. The grants provide housing and services to at least 973 households that have 1,453 people living in them each year. So this 30% cap would limit us as a COC in Rhode Island to apply for only $5 million of our existing permanent housing funding, and that would leave 681 families and households comprised of 1,020 people without the rental assistance and services they currently rely on to maintain their housing placement. Additionally, as you all I'm sure can imagine, the associated landlords, property management companies, nonprofits, and owners of those 681 units would lose the reliable monthly rental income they've been relying on, and the agencies that run this program could face administrative and staffing cuts, which could result in a decreased capacity for permanent housing in our state. And these exact same risks extend to Rhode Island Housing's only $5 million COC grant. The second significant change in the notice is likely to make the impact more severe because it also places 70% of that $17.3 million portfolio into a nationally competitive funding pool that HUD plans to award based on merit criteria. And generally, those merit criteria do not align with the best practices in the work of ending homelessness or Rhode Island's current system design. And some merit criteria also conflict with local, state, city, and city policies and practices. Generally, this means much more of our funding will be competitive nationally, and we will not be able to renew all of state permanent housing funding that the state currently has, or likely that Rhode Island Housing has in our portfolio. So I wanted to make you aware of the situation of that, you know, potential crisis of housing instability for those over 1,000 formerly homeless Rhode Islanders. But I also wanted to let you know what we're doing right now in response. So as a designated applicant agency, the staff on my team are already well underway in designing the required local competition based on that notice of funding. I expect it to be released within the next few days in Rhode Island. And Rhode Island Housing is also continuing to advocate with our congressional delegation. And as I'm sure you can imagine, they're working lockstep in us to help avoid these damaging cuts potentially for the next 12 months. However, we're being told it's not likely to be successful at this time. So I'm sure you could add to that if you have any other details you'd like to do. But in terms of putting the impact in context, there are 15 agencies in Rhode Island, including our own Rhode Island Housing, that are facing these these cuts, and there's definitely going to be a significant gap in funding, even for agencies that don't have their funding cut. Because of how long HUD has taken to notice for this competition, and because of how long it takes for them to run and then score and award funds after a competition, we're looking at a delay in funding until the summer of 2026 at the earliest. And as I've mentioned, additionally, in the coming weeks, I'll know more specifics, but Rhode Island Housing and other programs are likely to be cut or reduced or potentially deemed ineligible by HUD based on their risk review criteria included in the notes that are difficult to project for our state. So, obviously, it's continuously developing. Like I said, I think I'll have more information in the next few weeks. And I'm happy to
give you
more however you'd like.
Thank you.
And answer any questions.
Any questions?
Okay. I have one. Yes, thank you, Elizabeth, for that presentation. So various organizations, I know we're one of several that compete for this funding, and we've historically given it to provide permanent supportive housing. So the organizations that provide that housing, the sponsors, so they are on an annual basis, they are competing for funds to provide for operating subsidy?
Technically, yes, and that's always been the case. However, because 90% or more of our portfolio was not nationally competitive every year, so long as locally they're meeting our performance measures. I say our, I mean the COC's performance measures. They were basically guaranteed a renewal of funding. What's changed this year is the cap on those permanent housing programs means we cannot submit to renew every unit of
right.
And also because more of our money will be nationally competitive and based on a score related to those merit criteria, we are likely to decrease our portfolio overall.
Right. Okay.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, I just, yeah, I was a little surprised that it's an annual competitive program and 100% was going to operations. This puts us up in a precarious situation, I think.
I may have misspoke. 100% of the funding does not go to operations. The $14.5 million of the current portfolio pays for permanent supportive housing or permanent housing options, not 100%.
Okay. I'm sorry, 90? I'm getting confused. So.
I have a memo, too, with what I've
said
now that
all right.
I'm happy to hand out.
Okay.
But, yes, the entire portfolio is $17 million. $14.5 million of that funds permanent housing program.
Operating subsidies of permanent housing?
Not the entire $14.5 million, but some of that.
Okay.
I think this is the chairman person, whatever. I think to your point, Kevin, yes, there was effectively a rollover, and the permanent housing had been a pillar of the COC program
sure.
nationally. And, you know, once you provide the rental assistance, you need to continue to do that. The individuals benefiting may move on and hopefully do move on, but the facility and the housing
right.
you've created, you want to support.
Right, right, right.
And it's a... correct me if I'm wrong, Liz, it is a combination of private landlords and that house these individuals and utilize the rental subsidies to pay the expenses or to pay the
rent. That's what I was just thinking about to jump onto that. So not only do we have risk for the residents, but we have risk for the organizations that
and the landlords.
They're not
going to
have the funds.
Right. I expect that one continues to dozens and dozens of the country. I imagine that litigation that's going to take place. And that doesn't necessarily help, though, because then during that time when there's litigation going on, there's no money, no awards being made. So we are looking at, staggered grants expiring, there's not going to be any funds available, and we're going to have to deal with this as a state. It is the assistance.
Any concentration of impacted organizations? They're going to need to bridge maybe for the hopefully money coming, but if it doesn't come, that's a nice position. Is there any live tech deal from there? I'm sure.
We must have supportive housing in some of our low-income housing tax credit developments.
In some of our asset management portfolios, there is some of the operating does support units. We're working on getting that list, and I'll
just
have it for you.
Okay. I think it's worth looking at the concentration. It seems that organizations that tend to support formerly homeless, that they do a lot of it because they're really good at it.
We migrated a lot of the program itself, though, years ago when we kind of stepped back and, redesigned the continuum and the way we operated it in Rhode Island, and we moved to... to more public units versus concentrations within just service providers. So there is a number of providers and will be impacted. So, and I know the continuing and not surprising the direction that this is going, the administration is doing, but we're just going going to have to deal with it.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Sure.
All right, so let me ask Carol to talk about the forecast she will prepare.
Thank you, Carol Chappelle. So part of the material that you see today is our long-term financial forecast. This is the document here. We provided this forecast for board information starting with the fiscal year 26 budget and forecasting income and expenses for the next 5 years. The forecast is based on the current real estate and financial markets without significant fluctuations or changes in federal policies, which obviously could have a big impact on this forecast. So it is more of a baseline model forecast that we can work off of as things change. The actual results will change based on the economic and financial market factors that come about. The top section of this document is the new loan production estimate. It includes some minimal growth assumptions around average home price for our single family loans. We did not want to be too aggressive. It's more moderate than what we have been seeing the last few years. The multifamily production is based on our current pipeline, and you'll notice an estimated decrease starting in fiscal year 28, really based on the availability of soft funding, because that is still an unknown at this point. Broken out, the next section is the income section, and we've broken out that income section by division for multifamily, single family, loan servicing, and leased housing. The income numbers are derived from new loan production as well as our existing loan portfolio. We're using our current loan, so that's a big estimate within this. Our prepayment speeds have been fairly slow right now as interest rates have remained somewhat high. When interest rates come down, we will see our prepayments increase, and that will impact our net interest income as well as our servicing fees if we are not able to make up that difference in other loans. In the leased housing section, we have not adjusted the administration fees for federal programs since the federal budget is still somewhat in flux and we're seeing each one of these programs has a different type of renewal. So we've maintained our current rate throughout this forecast. In the expense section, we've broken out the expenses by major categories. Most of those categories, we're using a 3% inflation factor. There are a couple that are higher, medical insurance, IT is higher, and depreciation also has a higher inflation factor. The forecast shows a stable financial condition out for the next 5 years, which is really essential to our ability to issue our bonds, maintain our ratings, and provide the critical housing resources that we do. And at the bottom of the budget 2026 column, we've included some potential investments of our net income. These are the things that we do with our net income, and so we've included those there. And these will really ensure that we maintain strong capital reserves that are required by the rating agencies and still meeting the mission and adding to our housing programs. I know it's a lot of information, so I'm happy to answer any questions, or if you want a little more time to absorb it, you can come back to me with questions at any time.
Questions? Thoughts? It is a lot.
I like the format.
Me too.
We thought you would.
Great.
Thank you. I think it's very good, especially by department, and then showing that the net interest income as well.
Right.
Okay. Great.
Great. Easy to follow.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. Thank you, Kara.
And last topic is the revisiting the strategic plan. You should have a copy of it in You may recall that in 2024, Secretary at that time requested that we conduct a review of our strategic plan to see whether or not it's still aligned with what was happening in the state, review goals, identify new needs or gaps in housing systems in the state, and evaluate resources post-COVID to ensure that prioritized programs would continue to operate. We engaged Nunagrit partners to help us with prepare the original plan, and then to help us with this update. Nunagrit team interviewed over 50 partners, including elected officials, board members, and other stakeholders. In addition, the team at Nunagrit also reviewed documents produced by Housing Works LI and RIPAC, the Furman Center for Development, the government study that was conducted by the Department of Housing, our five-year production plan, and other development stuff. So to give a little context to this, the 2022 strategic plan was created before there was an executive for housing. The state had undertaken efforts to produce a statewide housing plan and governance strategy to align policymaking with housing production and preservation, and this was ongoing when the strategic plan was being updated. During interviews, many of the people said it was difficult to weigh in on what the priority should be. They don't understand what the relationship may be with the Executive Office of Housing, who's going to manage what. But I think we did a good job updating this, given what we do know, and trying to keep us on path and focus on some of the work that we need to continue to do or to expand upon. So I'm going to direct you to page 8, which is the first goal. We're keeping this goal the same, which is to increase housing production for low and middle-income Rhode Islanders. Made two modifications and added a couple of tasks. Maintain and improve the five-year production plan integrated with capital finance plan. Continue to support and improve on existing starter home production in conjunction with the Executive Office of Housing. The third bullet stays the same. Set program guidelines for Rhode Island Housing's land bank program and strategically acquire properties for future development activities. You may recall that there was legislation in the past session that allows us access to state-owned properties that might be appropriate for redevelopment, so that is an opportunity for us. We look to institute a development cost containment initiative specifically around LIHTC projects. There's a lot of conversation about the cost of production in Rhode Island, so we're looking forward to doing that work and incentivize innovative building techniques to lower the cost of construction. One thing comes to mind, how do we more effectively use modular construction in Rhode Island? And then explore options for increasing accessibility of Rhode Island housing financed developments while containing costs. There's been a lot of movement through the legislature on accessibility, 100% accessibility in affordable housing development. Okay, moving on to goal 2. The goal stays the same, expanding partnerships to increase creation and preservation of housing. The first goal is to, in collaboration with the Housing Department, produce a clear delineation of revised roles, responsibilities, and program operations of Rhode Island Housing vis-a-vis the Office of Housing, along with a plan and timeline to effectuate changes. That's well underway, and Amy and her team have been working on a draft, and we'll meet shortly with the Housing Department to go through that. Expand relationships with federal, state, municipal, and community partners to create additional funding resources. Continue support of an acquisition and rehab program for naturally occurring affordable housing. And we have changed the focus of achieving the goal, which will demonstrate our role as being critical for community partners and developers. Moving on to Goal 3. Goal 3 stays the same, driving innovation and accessibility and housing development. We did move one of the goals in this section and move to a previous continue support of non-traditional mortgage underwriting processes and products to address historical barriers to home ownership, continuing our first gen program and our home secure grant. And lastly here, enhanced programs and services for partners and participants in our leased housing programs, including aggressively pursuing special purchase vouchers. We've been very successful, and given where the continuum of care is going, I think that's going to be more and more important as we move forward. Goal 4 on page 11, this is a revised goal here. Communicate clearly and transparently Rhode Island Housing's unique role in the state housing ecosystem. This is where the most significant updates took place. So increased brand awareness of Rhode Island Housing, its unique value propositions, and opportunities created by the products that we provide. Institute a new set of performance metrics that include 10 data, comparative metrics, and milestones for key initiatives. You're seeing that quarterly now. Institute customer satisfaction surveys for folks that are accessing our products. In conjunction with the Office of Housing, create a working group to consider new financial products and services to meet emerging gaps in the market. And institute communications plan regarding financial and organizational changes. And, of course, that would have to occur with the Housing Department as well. A little bit of a modification to what we achieved with this goal, but certainly it means Rhode Island. Slide 12 of the deck, slight modification to the goal, maintain and improve versus transform Rhode Island Housing status as a flexible, dynamic, top-performing housing finance agency, and both here remain the same.
Questions or comments?
I'll take this.
I do think this is good activity to do, though, because a lot of times these strategic plans, you spend all that time, you get it on paper, and then you don't look at it until the next time, you know, you have to do another one in 10 years or 8 years or whatever it is. So I think this is good to update it, especially because I remember when we were doing it, and there were so many questions on what this new department was going to be and how the relationship was going to go. So I think this was a very worthwhile project.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think it probably makes sense to almost do a quarterly or semi-annual report back on these things. You're already doing the metrics monthly, and then to Kara's thing, the semi-annual, same thing, using that as a baseline, where are we, and just keep that kind of conversation going on a regular cadence. Other questions or comments? Thank you. Okay.
Now what everybody has been waiting for. All right. Thank you for sitting through this meeting. And
I took things out of order. Approval of the minutes of the board meeting held on October 16th, 2025. Do I have a motion?
Motion.
Second?
Second, this is Steve.
Comments or questions?
I was
there. Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
With one abstention. Approval of the external charitable donations and contributions. Carol?
It's James.
Oh, James. Sorry.
No problem. Good morning. This is James Comer. This request for action is to approve a charitable donation, which in this case, as it is from time to time, is participation in an event held by one of our partners. This event is the Rhode Island Mortgage Bankers Association annual dinner and installation of officers. The Rhode Island Mortgage Bankers Association has been a great partner and does great work for all businesses operating in the mortgage industry to promote and sustain responsible home lending. We have been a longtime member and have had a couple of staff members serve on the board over the years. This was for their event. Eight staff members attended at a total cost of $680. Just wanted to submit that.
I'll second. Kevin Orth.
Questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That was unanimous. Thank you. Okay. Approval of engagement of residential real estate appraisal firm.
Good morning. This is Peter Perdonis. This RFA is for the approval of residential real estate appraisal firms for the home ownership and loan servicing departments. As you can imagine, appraisals play a huge part in the analysis of single-family loans and in our loan servicing portfolio. Every year, we order about 210 or so appraisals in the lending side and about 21 or so on the loan servicing side for distressed properties. We issued an RFA in August and received 10 responses from Rhode Island appraisal firms. We convened a selection committee, met, analyzed, reviewed, and scored the responses on the RFP. We concluded that all of the submissions were worthy of being accepted into the pool and would like to move forward with that. The agreement is 2 years with a renewal of 1 year. Thank you very much.
Do I have a motion?
Motion, James DeRosa.
Second.
Second, Maria Jerry.
Questions or comments? This is the chairperson. Peter, how do you move through? Now you've got quite a list here. How do you move through and decide who gets what work?
It's basically a round-robin process. From time to time, some of the firms will let us know that they're extremely busy and they would like to for us to pause naming them as an appraiser on a transaction, but generally it's a round-robin.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
That was unanimous. Thank you. Firm approval of financing for Lippitt Mill in West Warwick.
Good morning. This is Melanie Brewer speaking. So the next two actions actually go hand in hand for the firm approval of Lippitt Mill and the authorization to issue the bonds and enter the loan. So if it's okay at the board, I can talk about both at the same time.
Please.
Thank you. All right. So the first one, this request for action is for the firm approval of Rhode Island Housing tax-exempt financing, an amount not to exceed $15.5 million for Lippitt Mill. This development received preliminary approval in April of 2025. The next request for action is for authorization to enter into a tax-exempt private placement back-to-back loan structure with JPMorgan Chase to fund the loan for Lippitt Mill. So Lippitt Mill is located in West Warwick. It was originally a historic mill built in 1809. The project will preserve the structure and revitalize the site by renovating the property into 71 new affordable housing units. The developer on the site is Marathon Development, LLC. The site over the last 10 years has had a lot of challenges, including two receiverships and a building that isn't complete. Marathon Development was a consultant originally back when the first developer had this deal and so has historic knowledge of the project. They were able to acquire this project out of receivership in fall of 2024. The receivership also had previously received allocations of federal historic tax credits and Rebuild Rhode Island tax credits, all of which have been retained through the receivership. So this project's going to be able to do the 71 units. It'll be 100% affordable, all at 60% AMI. There's 15 efficiency units, 33 one-bedroom units, and 23 two-bedroom units. The syndicator in this deal is National Equity Fund. This has changed since preliminary, so they were actually able to receive 5 cents more per federal credit, so it's at 85 cents. The state tax credits in this deal are at 79 cents per credit, and they'll be receiving 15% equity at closing, or about $1.1 million. The lender in this transaction is JPMorgan Chase, so they'll be doing the tax-exempt loan of the $15.5 million. It'll be a construction to perm. The permanent loan will be about $4.2 million, determined at a later date. So changes since preliminary that I just kind of want to address. Again, there's been the increase in the federal tax credit pricing of about 5 cents. There was the change in the syndicator for that pricing to National Equity Fund. There was an increase in 3 units to the scope of the project. The construction costs, though, did increase in about $3.7 million. And so those have been reviewed by Rhode Island Housing. We've gone through the process of checking. It's primarily been driven by tariff escalations. So at the beginning of the year, when the tariffs were placed on China, steel, aluminum, copper, and lumber all increased. Therefore, we've seen the hard construction costs increase in this project. But there was also, on top of the tariffs, the existing HVAC that was installed needs to be removed and replaced. Radon mitigation piping needs to be installed throughout the building. And then, again, there was that additional 3 units that were also added to the scope. This triggered a few of the other construction line items to increase, right? So you saw an increase in contingency as a function of this. The acquisition increase attributed to an increase in the carrying costs. There are soft cost increases, including legal budgets and insurance costs. That also included that came in $300,000 higher than expected, right? And so looking at all the increased financing costs, this kind of trickled down throughout the budget. But at the end of the day, the underwriting, it conforms to all of our underwriting standards. We've looked at the total development cost per unit. It's approximately about $322,000, and it is meeting those standards. Rhode Island Housing will not be providing the first mortgage, so this is a conduit transaction. JPMorgan Chase will provide the capital for Rhode Island Housing's tax-exempt issuance, and the proceeds will be loaned to the borrower and the amount of the $50 million, which is the construction loan. The funding for the construction loan is non-recourse to Rhode Island Housing, and Chase will be assuming all of the financial risk. Upon construction completion, JPMorgan Chase will step in as the permanent lender. And again, there's no soft subsidies from Rhode Island Housing on this deal. So this request for action is for the approval of the tax-exempt financing and the amount not to exceed the $15.5 million, and for the authorization to enter into that tax-exempt private placement.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Do you have a motion?
So moved. Kevin Ort.
Second. Ms. Yosa.
Questions or comments? Not to be too nitpicky, but total development costs, does this include the costs that the prior owner?
So, yeah, some of that was able to be absorbed and put back into it, and that is in the construction costs.
Okay. And apart from this deal, is this the beginning of when we start seeing tariffs? Because a couple meetings ago, we were like, nope, we haven't seen tariffs.
Yeah. This is the first deal coming to closing that we've seen it in, and there's one other deal that we're aware of right now.
Yeah. And what's the scale, generally? That's a rough question.
I think it's dependent on the type of construction, what's being used, and, you know, whether or not some of the contractors are able to lock in pricing earlier. I think we're going to start to now see this. We're hearing from some GC that they're, you know, they're getting pushback from some of their suppliers, and they're seeing an increase. So I think this is, as you said, the beginning of probably
begin cataloging.
Yeah,
I think so.
We can keep track of what's happening. Yeah. What's the deal?
No, it's one of Craig's deals. I can't off the top of my head think of it.
Logging what we're seeing. Yeah.
I think that makes sense. Any other questions or comments?
I have a proposed question. It's not specific to this transaction, I don't think. There are no state historic credits.
No, there's no longer any state.
Okay.
There is a
So that's a long history probably there that I'm not going to get it. But I will put a plug in for getting more funding for state historic tax credits. I think it's a fantastic thing for our state. There's so many wins about that program. So please.
Especially given our inventory.
Yes.
We have
exactly. Exactly. Yep.
Just would like to also just point out that Harry and Frank Angevine from Marathon Development are here. Been good partners.
Okay. If there are no objections, we will take a single vote for the firm approval of financing for Lippitt Mill and the authorization to issue tax-exempt loan to support construction of Lippitt Mill. No objections. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That was unanimous. Any other matters?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh,
we need to separate on number 7, if you don't mind.
Oh, okay. Vote to authorization to issue tax-exempt loan to support construction of Lippitt Mill. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
And with that, do I have a motion to adjourn?
Motion to adjourn.
All in favor?
Aye.
We are adjourned. Thank you.